Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you, and welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, it's a beautiful day. Blue sky, sunshine. It's great to be back in the studio, I think. It was good out bush, camped out there. Gimpy muster. The team did well out there and the team did well here to keep things rolling on, keep making a noise on the airwaves. But, it was a pretty good muster. Some good talent, good performances, and some a little dry and empty, and they didn't seem to be with it. Some of the big stars too. But good to be back. Thank you all for doing your bit, both at Gympie and at the station. My guest today, Dr. Wollombi Waters, a author, scriptwriter, lecturer at Griffith University, man of many talents, columnist, and could go on and on with this bloke. But anyway, let's welcome Dr. Wollombi Waters. Welcome to the studio. How are you? Welcome to the program.
I'm good. Good.
You going good? Cool. All right. Tell us your mob, your country.
Gamurui, Yamanginda Gumurui Wanangulda, Calvin Gunagul. When you hear Gamurui, there's Calvin Gunagul at the end. What that is, that's the water systems which go through our country, like, you know, the bloodlines connecting the heart. Well, them water systems is what life is about, you know. And our heart is Booba Lagoon, which has Munungara, rainbow serpent, at the bottom. And so when I say this, Yamanginda Gumurui, I'm saying, hey, you, I am Gumurui. Yamanginda Gumurui Wunangulda, that is my country. Calvin Gunagul, through the bloodlines of this land, bloodlines being the water systems. Very important, you know, that those of us who have access to country and language exercise that right, you know, particularly now with the attacks on bilingual teaching on Aboriginal languages. And the beauty of the kinship system throughout Australia is that there were five languages spoken. Gumurui is one of them, Pinjar another one, that are direct descendants from the five ancestral beings that created this country. So if you spoke one of those five languages, you are understood wherever you went around the country, because the other languages are derivatives from, like Creoles. You know, grandfather's, grandmother's, grandmother's country. So it's not over yet, you know. You can't believe, you know, or be told, no matter what your circumstances are as an individual, that this stuff is over with. You know, there's little pockets, like when you know, the embers of a fire. You blow on them embers, man. You got a bushfire, right?
You'll get them going.
That's it.
Booba Lagoon. Is that around Toomala?
Yeah. That's about an hour and a half between Toomala, Moree. Very, very significant to us fellas.
Significant to white man too, because he likes to run his boats and do skiing and stuff there, eh? Or what, eh?
Well, that's what, you know, brought it to national prominence. In regards to this white man, you know, you could call it the defining moment.
Oh, another one of those. All right. Yes.
When
we'll get onto that topic. Yes.
When Senator Heron was Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, there was a long case of respect to Booba Lagoon, and you know, they wanted to. They have the racing, the motorboats. And, you know, of course, you know, you got cotton industry out there, which, and there's caveat water underneath catchments that, you know, 5, 6, 7 of them, you know, like it literally is a beating heart that feed, you know, water through McIntyre River all the way, connecting eventually to the Murray, going right up through the Northern Territory out to Western Australia, which, again, why this Kalmangunagul is so important. Because, as I said, no matter what's happened to your own individual history, you know, because we understand that, you know, a lot of us, through no fault of our own, had this cultural memory taken from us. But the beauty of the Aboriginal kinship system is that it all ties together like a jigsaw puzzle. And that's why these urban fellas have got to wake up, mate, in regards to what's going on in the Northern Territory. You know, this is, you know, it's time to end the, you know, who's the authentic Aboriginal, you know. All the arguments and the debates in the 70s and 80s about, you know, the Northern Territory gets the most funding because they're the real blackfellas. All that stuff, that's got to end now because, you know, however it happened, you know, the mobs who retained the most language, connection to ceremony and culture, that's the jigsaw puzzle that connect us all home. So people got to realise these ceremonies were right through Australia. We weren't living as an island, eh, in Gummeroy. We weren't living as an island
exactly.
In Berrygubba, eh,
yeah,
Uncle?
That's right, yeah.
We were all connected through these ceremonies. Now, what's going on with these bilingual teachings and, you know, not allowing and moving these Northern Territory mob from their land and country? That means that there's a lot of mob who won't ever find their way home because these fellas have got the blueprint to DNA to our origins and our relationships with, you know, the universe. Trouble is, to a lot of people, that's been mishmashed as, you know, romantic stories to tell your grandchildren, like children's stories, nursery rhymes, you know, this multicoloured rainbow serpent in children's books.
So it's another divisive tactic, colonial tactic, and a strategy by the coloniser to divide.
Oh, this is it. You know, you discredit anything to do with Aboriginal knowledge systems. You know, I just came back from Melbourne. I was part of a book, a collective of short stories called "The World to Come," and it's an international correlation of international writers. And we came together and we wrote how we see the world in 50 years' time. And it was really, really interesting because there's stories from South Africa, India. And again, you know, as we keep saying, what people have got to realise is this is a world movement. You know, this attack on people of colour, Indigenous people, this goes outside of Australia, you know. And what Australians have got to realise is that, you know, we are the oldest in that knowledge base. You know, we have the very, very connection to our creation. They know stories of great migrations here. You know, you look at every other Indigenous people around the world, and they all got stories of great migrations which connect back to Africa. We don't. Think about it when you were a child, Uncle, and you were growing up, eh? You were never told anything other than the fact that we come from this country.
That's right.
And, you know, science is starting to realise that that's the case. And these old people, you know, these Merindirimbara, these ancestral beings, they always leave little markers. And that's what Mungo Man was. He was a little marker. So that no matter how much these white fellas developed this out of Africa theory, this Mungo Man always put question to it. Where did this Mungo Man come from? Because he don't have the DNA of that matriarchal gene coming out of Africa. But he modern man, Mungo Man. He the oldest living ceremonial burial in this world, you know? And if he was blonde-haired, blue-eyed, he would be the first thing taught in Australian schools. Instead of something you're going to find as you get older. You know, another one of them little secrets put in the wardrobe, in the cupboard, they don't want you to know. So that's what this book did. It confronted those little secrets in the cupboard. You there?
Yes, 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 back again. Yeah, just...
It was a bit scary too, opening night, Uncle.
Eh?
Because... we were up against Tara Moss. You know, the
model?
The model who writes the detective stories?
Yeah.
One of Australia's biggest selling authors.
When you say you were up against her, what was it? Some sort of a...
You know how you have panels running at the same time?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Gotcha.
So no good. Murray walks in, you know, and my publisher's there, you know, pulling her hair out.
No one there.
Editor, Spinal Wonders is the publisher's.
Mm. What was their concern? That no one was in the room?
Yeah, there's only five people in there.
True. You sure did they open the doors or anything or what? Or they still had them shut shop?
Well, that's it. Doors closed. It was like your 18th. Remember your 18th when you go, oh, no one's coming. No one loves me. You know? And I walked in going, oh, no. And I, no good. I've got to know Jeff McMullen really well.
Mm.
So as a, you know, courtesy, he did the launch.
Mm-hmm.
So then, no good. Murray's sitting there thinking, oh, shame, Joe. I got Jeff McCullen 60 minutes and I love five people in the room. You know, shame. But no good. They opened them doors. We packed out.
Great.
It was awesome.
Yeah, great. So you're one of a number of people that have contributed to this book of children's. Is it children's stories? The world's
no,
a camera?
No,
it's
this
not children's
is,
stories. This is proper writing.
Yeah, this is proper writing. This is.
The world to come.
The world to come.
And it was just launched over the weekend.
At the Melbourne Writers' Festival.
Great.
And as I said, it's looking at, you know, there's a really interesting story from South Africa where with all the gene pool stuff, research being done, and they're now mixing not races but species. And as these species, you know, as servants and all the rest, they then get classified the way the old apartheid was. So, you know, humans become the superior species over these multi-species people coming through this classification system of equal rights. And it's a really interesting reflection on the way apartheid worked, and it's also very interesting for any, you know, oppressed Indigenous people to read, because it just again highlights, you know, how you become invisible outside of the classification that people give you, you know.
All right.
We appear to be the helpless in need of being managed, you know.
Yeah.
The idea that we have a mind of our own is so foreign. The idea that we can run our own destiny is not even a thought.
Yes.
You know?
That's why we have to keep on reminding them we ran this country not all that long ago and ran it well.
Oh, better than any other continent in the world.
Yes. Yes.
You know, we were talking last time, that book now, The Great Australian Estate, that, you know, shows that, again, you know, the term the lucky country, because of the amazing resources we had here when these white fellas come, you know, they couldn't believe just how fertile the soil was and how we, you know, there was optimum environment no matter where you were in Australia. If you were in the desert, if you're in the rainforest, if you're in freshwater land country, everything was perfect in the way it should be in regards to you know, being fertile, seasonal. And that's where that term, lucky country, come from. But as you and I know, and as this book, The Great Estate, shows, there's nothing to do with luck. This was land management.
It was all good management, yes.
Exactly, over tens of thousands of years. And this is why, no matter at what stage, because of the trauma of colonization, because of the taking of our cultural memory, because of the stealing of our origins and our languages and our cultural practice, no matter at what level you have that understanding, you have to start there, you know? Mm. And from there you develop your term of reference and then you branch out into the world. You know, if all you know about your Aboriginality is that woman not allowed to play the didgeridoo, Start there. Because that's a law for a reason. And when you start there, that's all you know. That's all you've retained because of the traumas. And remember, this is for no other reason than it was taken from you. For no other reason than it was taken from you. That is all you remember. Well, you start there, and you will learn that the reason for that is that there were complex marriage systems, custodial governance between man and woman, and that we both had our place. And there was no need for feminism because the majority of us came from matriarchal cultures. Women had their place. They had their final say. Mm. We did in accordance to our mother's 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 country. You know, that's because that woman gave birth to creation. That's where these sayings, you know, Mother Earth, the Earth our mother, that's where it comes from. You know, so when you do that research, you find out the story and the origins of. Now with the didgeridoo, within Gumaroi, even though we didn't play didgeridoo, and this is what I mean about the kinship system, we don't play didgeridoo down in Gumaroi. But we still have the story of its origins because of the Bunya Festival. Because these are the keys. These are the keys to the code of our DNA, to our origins, to our creation. And during the time of the Mirandurumba, the ancestral beings, there needed to be a transfer from consciousness to the ancestral being, to the totems, the animals. So the ancestral beings had to give up their consciousness and join Buja in creation. Now, not all the ancestral beings wanted to do that, you know, because consciousness is a big deal. You know, it's thought. This is the origins of remembering where you came from. So one of the ancestral beings, he ran up north, because I don't know if people understand, but the didgeridoo was only played in the top half of Australia. So this fella, he went up north, and he left his woman, because his woman didn't want to betray Buja and creation. Now, because consciousness was being passed from the ancestral beings to the animals, eventually to woman, there were human beings at this time, but in a very primitive form. And this fella, he took one of those young girls, and he ended up killing her because he was an ancestral being. He was too powerful to have a relationship with. And in that morning, realizing what he had done through his individualism, through his want to be remembered as an individual, because he had lost faith in the collective. He was meant to give his consciousness to Buja and join Buja in a faith that this was a collective consciousness. You had your opportunity as an individual, but there was lust and there was greed and there were other things that came through the ancestral beings that were no good. And this is why Buja had to now harness that in, give that consciousness to the animals through the totems, in creating humans. So in that quest for individuality, this fella took a woman, killed her in relationships with her because he was too powerful, in mourning rips his manhood, because that was the essence of the damage, and then blows that seed. And that's why when you have the rain season coming down in the north, everything goes from dust, red dirt, to these most beautiful flowers overnight. Now, these, again, are stories that need to be told and retained. Now, this is not a Gumaroi story. But we know these stories through ceremonies. Mm. And that's what I keep saying. You know, there's no reason, no matter how much you've lost, to give up on the oldest culture in the world and start learning about individualization, materialism, greed, you know, to feel comfortable in your own home at the loss of your brothers and sisters. Because as long as there's these remnants, as long as there's these burning embers, you can connect to your own culture. The problem is when you stop the journey of looking. That's the problem, Uncle Tiger.
Mm, yeah. For you to learn your language, they're obviously language speakers. I mean, language can be difficult where there isn't language speakers, where there are very few language speakers and stuff like that. I mean, that was a was that difficult for you?
I was really lucky because I had Uncle Reggie Knox.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known Uncle Reggie Knox since I was 15. And he's fluent in the language. And he's got a daughter, Missy, who's the same age as I am. And so we would talk the language together as kids growing up. And there was enough remnants there that we can build on that. And then we had a lot of language programs, you know, Renaissance repatriation programs in Gomelroy. So we actually have a lot of language speakers now in our community.
Very fortunate.
Very, very, very fortunate. But what is important out of this yarn, Uncle, is that we didn't have a lot of language speakers when I was born. But we have them now.
Yeah. Very good, very good. Let's take a break for a song, a short song. Liz Collins singing No More Boomerang, one of Kath Walker's or Oodgeroo Noonuckle's poems. I want to come back and talk to you, well, I want to talk to you about the Prime Minister's comment. You made reference to it. The most defining moment in this country, in the history of this country, was the invasion.
You can't tell me you were surprised.
No, he continually lives down to my expectations. There's no question about that. Poor bloke. You can't describe him anything other than a clown.
See,
really,
that's what we're saying. When you come from the oldest living culture in the world, and you understand how multi-layered and complex and intellectual it was. Just what we're talking now about, you know, the story we know that stayed, and then you do the research and you understand, oh, that ties to kinship systems, connection to land, place between man, woman, identity, parable, morals, values, how you live, history. Why would you side with this fella?
Yeah. And to have him making this country, these people that call this place home, to have him make them look like the laughing stock of the country with his ridiculous stupidity and comments and stuff is outrageous. Well, the Prime Minister's comments, the most defining moment in the history of this country was when the British came here, the invasion. It was certainly a defining moment, but by gee, if that's the most defining moment in what, 60,000 years plus of history, of survival, of this country, sustaining human life, he's pretty short-sighted and very uneducated, not very well educated. It was one of the things, one way to describe him, I suppose. How did you feel? What were your thoughts when you heard that comment?
Well, the first is, as you said, defining moment, yes. The defining moment, no. And not in the way he intends. You know... There was an ethnic cleansing from that moment, you know? And again, people don't like you comparing because they become offended with. But, you know, the Holocaust in Germany, that was a defining moment too, you know?
Mm.
So is that where this conversation's going? No. Because they live in darkness. You know, they don't, or should we say they live in whiteness, you know?
That's probably it. They live in whiteness, yes.
And you know, remember just a month ago when he come out with saying that, you know, the country owes its very existence to a form of foreign investment, and he talked about the British coming to an unsettled land, the great southern land that was unsettled. And remember, everybody came out and said that he'd made this gaffe, he made this political blunder. Well, what we learned from this latest one is that there's no blunder at all here.
None at all. You're right.
This is what this man thinks. You know, he's a staunch colonialist, and this is a fight that's not over. You know, there's still remnants for us, but it's got to begin with our self-belief and faith system. And what's happening is these fellows are trying to erode that with every day that our kids attend their schooling. You know? And it opens the doors for the Conservatives to come out and voice their opinion. Just after he made the comment, you know, one of the first journalists to agree with him was, of course, Andrew Bolt.
Oh, clown number two.
Well, this is it. And, you know, he wrote, like a little kid, you know, he won't give up a grudge, you know, that the right to properly defend Abbott's comments means risking legal action under the Racial Discrimination Act. Well, does that tell us that Bolt learnt from being defeated in his own court of law about his attack on fair-skinned fellas? No, because he's still holding this grudge.
That's right.
How many times do you hear him refer to, you know, not being able to say what he thinks or feels because of this fear of prosecution through this Racial Discrimination Act? You know, that was a while ago now. Let it go.
Yeah, get over it. You're found to be a lazy journalist. Get over it. You didn't do your homework right. Get over it.
And that's it. It was not about him being persecuted because he attacked fair-skinned fellas. It was about him fabricating the history of the people that he was talking about. He published lies about people's childhood that supported his argument.
These sorts of things, they perpetuate this this continual attack on First Nations people. Abbott there with his stupidity, but he's the Prime Minister for Aboriginal people. He's our Prime Minister, he claimed to be.
Look, it just doesn't stop.
Supreme Mission Manager.
Well, that's exactly it. And you know, who's guiding that Mission Manager? You know? In looking at the comments made by Abbott, as a journalist, as an academic, you do a bit of research. You know, you try and understand the rationale, you know, of where this is coming from. And I don't know if people are aware, but he gave a speech to what's called the IPA, which is a think tank for corporate Australia. You know, it's the Institute of Public Affairs.
A conservative think tank.
Exactly. And this speech that he gave was the special guest for the night was Rupert Murdoch. So that shows you the social capital we're dealing with here. Now, and I didn't know a lot about this IPA, you know, so I jumped on their website, and within 10 minutes of reading their charter, it's like I'm reading a speech or an article written by Noel Pearson. You know, people talk about how Noel's this visionary. Well, let me just share with you some of the points that come out of their own website. They believe in a free market libertarian economy. What that means is that it's a system of government which is run on profit and loss through economic rationale over social justice. They want lower taxation. These guys want to pay less tax than what they do.
And pay less wages too, I'd imagine.
Sorry?
Pay less wages too, I'd imagine.
Look, they're actually behind one of the things that they're trying to get rid of is the minimum wage.
Wow.
So that you can go back to paying people $8 an hour.
So they don't have to go to China to get their product produced up and bring it back here for sale.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. They're very much for privatisation of government business. They want to reduce government spending. And what's really interesting, there's a lot within their website about programs that target welfare in Indigenous communities with a want to encourage a transition to work, self-reliance and income. Well, again, when this is why blackfellas got to educate themselves, you know? You know, start, like we said, with your blackness. Start with your Aboriginality. Don't vary from that. From there, when you hear these terms, you know, Aboriginal welfare dependency, all this type of stuff, research the history of where it came from, the people who first spread that doctrine. You know, look and inform yourself, you know, and then you start to be able to articulate an informed response. You know, so you're able to look and make your own judgment calls, you know. And as I said, 10 minutes looking at this website, you go, oh, well, geez, this sounds like a lot of the policies cited by Warren Mundine and Noel Pearson. So now you know where they're coming from. That's what research does. It strengthens your resolve.
Yeah. Well, then, talking about Pearson, there was an article in The Conversation where Pearson was compared to Charlie Perkins as great leaders. I mean, now, leaders for who? Was Charlie your leader? Was he my leader? No, he wasn't. Did we have leaders before colonisation? No, we never. And this was something that was written by, I think it was Charlie's daughter, Rachel Perkins, comparing this great leader with her dad. What were your thoughts on that when you read that?
Well,
I think you were asked to do a response to it, weren't you?
Just because you're asked to write a response doesn't mean it gets
published. You're going to get a run, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. At the moment, we're still negotiating. So let's call it negotiating.
Right.
So fingers crossed, you know.
But that point of leaders, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, the leaders are being all identified by and appointed by the system, by the colonizer, particularly the media.
Well, that's just it, you know. And that's why it's so important to understand what's going on in the world that you live. And that only comes from an education. Now, whether or not, if you're not happy at the education you got at school, that doesn't mean you stop education. That means you now need to go and educate yourself to find what does engage with you. Why was it that you weren't engaged at school? What was it you weren't learning within the white man's education system that satisfied your needs as a black woman or a black man? You know, start with, you know, the stuff that you do. If you love Tupac Shakur, research Tupac Shakur and then find out that Tupac Shakur was incredibly well-read, very well-educated, that there was a history in regards to knowledge and understanding his people, you know, and then go from there. Now, in regards to Rachel has a very, very high national public profile. She is seen as a successful Aboriginal woman, and white middle-class Australia know who she is, which means they won't question what's being said in her article. They don't question what Noel Pearson says in his articles when he writes for The Australian. Because they already know the value systems and they already understand the value systems and they're already engaged within the value systems that these people are sharing.
So they would question the articles that are written by Dr. Wollombi Waters.
Which is why I write different the value Indigenous system. Times, Uncle.
Yeah, which is where you embrace a different value system and stuff, yeah.
You know, and that came out of years of censorship. Because, you know, being read by people like yourself, we've had the conversations, you know, before, coming from the same family as Uncle Lyle Senior, Uncle Bobby Weatherall, Reggie Knox, Paul Spearham, you know, you need to tell the truth. And Australia is nowhere near wanting to hear the truth. And that's why when you read Rachel's article, there's not a lot of truth in there. What there is opinion, and there is high emotion in what she's saying. Rather than talk about the lack of evidence within the communities that Noel serves, the lack of evidence, rather than talk about the monopoly on Aboriginal funding, $200 million, $200 million it is now, Scullins confirmed it. After our last interview about the Cape York welfare reform program, $200 million dollars for 2,961 people. There was nothing about that in Rachel's letter. What there was an emotional attachment of a daughter talking about her father surviving cancer, where she relates Charles to Noel. And she even said at one point, imagine watching your people dying in front of you. Now, when you write from the position she does, as one of the most well-known Aboriginal women in Australia, successful producer, people already know who she is. And then, rather than talk about evidence, statistics, and the reality of what's happening in the Northern Territory, in our urban centres, on the East Coast, she uses such emotion that it makes it difficult to counter her position. This is an argument that she relies on, which is already implied within her readers. She's taken advantage of the boundary constrictions associated to our people. There's no research based to anything she said. The article was purely her opinion, and it pulled at the heartstrings and the stereotypes of her readers. She also labelled, this is very important, that comments that criticise Pearson amount to nothing, and this is her words, than resentful and negative gossip that undermines Aboriginal people. So what do you do then when you bring the evidence to the table? When one of the most popular Aboriginal people in the country have said that any criticism of Noel Pearson is resentful and negative. She also talks about jealousy of his success. So these people who came through this white education system, who listen to Tony Abbott, who read Andrew Bolt, are not listening to any of the evidence that you give, because they've been told by a high-profile Aboriginal woman that you are angry, resentful, and jealous. And that justifies and makes them feel safe when they rely on the Conservatives like Marcia, Noel, Warren to keep an agenda that they relate and understand to, and that is that we need intervention.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, very dangerous letter.
Yes, no, it's good to have your views on that and to explain it.
And you know what more?
Mm.
You have a better history than anybody in this country in regards to the origins of Aboriginal media. That's fair to say, eh?
Well, as good as anybody else, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you were there in the early days. You were there at, you know, Redfern Radio and all the rest, you know?
Yeah.
Well, do you remember, and this is what I mean about listeners, educate your mind to your own history because you will be told lies. Okay, don't listen to the lies. Educate yourself and know your own history. You know what started Indigenous media in this country? Walpuri Media, Innabella Video Television.
Innabella, that's right. Pirate television, yes.
That's where Aboriginal media started. That's Innabella, where Rachel was trained, by the way.
Oh, right. Innabella and Yundamu were the two communities, yeah.
Now, you know what the idea was? Because back then, there was Boomerang. Les Collins, there no Boomerang.
Mm.
Well, there was an embedded Aboriginal cultural identity. So you know what Aboriginal media was at first? The overriding principles were maintenance of language and ceremony to ensure that the oldest living culture in the world was maintained, recorded, and documented. Remember the early programs?
Yeah.
Now, from there, Rachel and her crew turned it towards a political activism and civil rights where they challenged the authority of the remote Aboriginal, stated that as urban Aboriginals, they were as authentic, defended their fair skin, and we moved away from language and ceremony and cultural maintenance. So she was actually part of the cultural genocide. Now she talks publicly about Redfern now as an entertainment to the masses. Know your history. Screen Australia's current CEO, Graham Mason, He described the majority of Australian films as art house, a tough sell. Rachel replied, arguing that commercial success is the very heart and intent of the modern Aboriginal filmmaker. That's Rachel's own words. Commercial success is at the very heart and intent of the modern Aboriginal filmmaker. I've always thought, this is a direct quote, that Indigenous films could cross over into the mainstream and that it was content, and that it was content that was not making them do that. Cinema is about entertainment. I don't necessarily think Brand New Day's success is a race thing. So this woman that was trained by Indigenous media, when we were fighting for the survival of our language and our ceremonies, the oldest living culture in the world, as we hear from Noel, as we hear from Marcia, as we hear from Warren, is now saying that we have a right to be successful within a white system. These are what they call civil rights. I don't want civil rights, mm-hmm. Uncle Tiger. Mm-hmm. I want human rights.
Yes.
I want the right to speak my own language. And I want the right to know my own history. I don't want to work as a carpenter. I don't want a job in a nursery. I want to be an Aboriginal ceremonial lawman. I want to go back to Calvin Gunugal. I want to go back to the water systems and make sure they flourish so that I have fertile land.
And in doing that, when you talk about the water systems and fertile land, I mean, that benefits the whole country. That is not just a black thing. So a lot of these things that we talk about, you, I, and others that don't aspire to commercial success or to these white values that determine success, there is a spin-off. There is benefit for all of this country, all who call this home. When you say, I want to see that the heartbeat of this country and its arteries, the river systems, remain clear, unclogged and flowing, that's beneficial to this whole country.
You know what happens when that Murray River dries up? That's what? Your artery being blocked.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Means the blood's not going to the heart anymore.
That's it, yeah.
And that Murray River's drying up.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's been documented and recorded for a good 40 years or more since it was first raised. It's been around a hell of a long time, the concern by a lot of people, black fella and white fella. Well, look, it's time getting away. We wanted you to do a reading of one of your short stories that's in the book that reflects on a lot of this business we talk about.
Gee, hey, you won't know how lucky you are. I just happen to have the book beside me. How lucky was that?
Where can people get that book? How?
Geez, I'm a shocker. See, this goes back to, you know, for me education, PA, I'm still a black fella. Google, yeah. The World to Come, Spineless Wonders is the publication.
Right.
And I'm sure there'll be a list of outlets and all the rest. Hey, I wish I could have got it down a bit in price. It's about $27 a copy. But please, you know, if you can find the Bungu, it's a mad investment, you know? We'll start the yarn halfway through the final story. I've just propped me yarn to my shoulder. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Gamal Yanai Willaba, No Going Home. What it is, you've got a Warringin. Now, the Warringin with us, you know, again, because cultural memory been taken, we'll use white fella reference. The Warringin were like the angels of Biami, Budja. And when these ancestral beings refused to give up consciousness, the Warringin came. And they rounded up the last of the ancestral beings. Because these fellas, you got to understand, they not all ancestors, not all ancestral beings were good fellas. You know, death, envy, jealousy, it had to come from somewhere. So this was about rounding them all up, you know, and giving us another chance. So this is Budja. A lot of people here, you know, Biami. Gamal Roy, you should only say Biami if you initiated. So we say Budja. I should be saying Budja. again, the reason we say Biami is people know who you're talking about. But as you go through your levels of consciousness, you should really use the term Budja. So you've got Budja talking to this Warangan. And this Warangan, he's about to leave. You ready?
Yep.
Eternity. It's never ending. The suffering becomes tiresome. The loneliness extreme. There's an unavoidable sadness in the tone spoken by Budja. Where do you go after this, once I leave? Asked the Warangan. Home, replies Budja. The beginning, inquires the Warangan. No, Warangan. Before the beginning. Before the beginning, there's a beat, a rhythm of thought, a time and place where they come together. The only compensation for the never-ending time, confirms the voice. The Warangan asks, is this consciousness? No, says Budja. This is before consciousness, before all else. This is the time before the beginning. Gamawi Bidawi. This is a moment caught beyond time. This, Warangan, this is heaven. The Warangan asks, you were there? Budja does not lie, says the voice. And using these words, the voice reveals itself to the universe and all its surroundings. In the teaching of our Gamaroi law, or Binanganga, only those of the highest understanding are allowed to refer to our creator as Biami. Instead, others are to refer to the word Budja, the spirit of all creation. Budja was born from Biami's own consciousness. The Warangan cries as the universe expands. It's time, states Budja. The Warangan asks, will I remember any of this afterwards? No, nothing, replies Budja. So much knowledge lost, pleads the Warangan. This is the sacrifice that comes with mortality and sin. I mean no interference, says Budja. Then why do you do it? Asks the Warangan. Only because you are so unhappy, asks Budja. As are you, wails Warangan. I didn't mean that, Budja, I'm sorry. I still love you, confirms Budja. Is that a sign of my becoming sick? Things slipping out without any meaning? Yes, that's how it all begins. You're becoming human, replies Budja. The Warangan takes a deep breath. I'm ready. I'm ready to go back. You have to know, you have to be warned that the last time you broke law, Aboriginal law, warns Budja. We were lost. You abandoned us, pleads the Warangan. I cannot control your will. You trespassed on sacred ground, ceremonies you don't understand, commands Budja. Our land, our ceremony, states the Warangan. You initiate things you don't understand, replies Budja. The Warangan begins to chant, Gamaroi, Gumaroi, Kamilaroi, Yama, Yane, Yilaji, Yawo. Again, Budja speaks with warning, deep in his tone. That is a sacred dance you play with, Warangan. And like all things ancient that come from our origins, our very universe, they have source, they have power, a power you don't understand. Eyes open and then close. A man is in and out of deep sleep. He's not quite conscious. The eyes open again, just long enough to show fear deep in the soul of his eyes. And then the eyes close. You like that?
Hey, that's a nice way of putting things. Good idea. And, we've just got enough time to say thank you very much. Great yarning, and we'll talk again.
All right. Yamanginda Gumaroi to all the people out there, and stay black.
Thank you very much, Dr. Wollumbi Waters. With a short one of the short stories of the book, that he was one of a collective of writers. And the book was called The World to Come. It's time for me to go. Make sure you join us tomorrow. I've got Mary Graham live in the studio tomorrow. Make sure you join us on your local First Nation station.